for the axe to fall.
Sofjian said. The plan is fraught with unknowns and dangers. There is no denying that. But it galls me to wait for our captors to decide our fates. I find it difficult to admit out loud. But the ogre's oration is compelling on one point. It is better to make a move and have it potentially end in spectacular disaster, than do nothing and have the deserters decide things for us. Braelar seemed amused by that.
I know your mind, Muldus. What of you, Vindoro? Rudgie? Do you still feel we should proceed?
Vindoro pushed his bottom lip out with his tongue, thought about it for a minute, and said,
It was my fool idea. Could go tits up in a hurry, that's for plaguing sure. But better than sitting here, staring at each other until the deserters slice our throats, or husk us, or lop off our limbs or whatever. I say we do it.
Rudgie nodded.
Aye, I'll volunteer to make the climb, the stones of crevices, and I have small feet and hands. Grew up in the mountains, and smaller on the all, harder on the whole, harder to spot. I'll go.
Sofjian looked at the young Sildoon with what might have been respect. I will accompany. While not small, I am far daintier than the rest of your brutes. And they did nothing to snuff out my abilities. The deserters have some resistance to my memory craft, but I can still take one out, and I certainly can stun one of the foci.
Vindoro said.
Aye, and I'll be going as well.
Muldu said.
What do you plaguing know about climbing walls, you dumb prick?
No more nor less than anyone else here, but a lot of crevices, and I got thin fingers, and it was my plaguing idea. I'm going.
As Morgan laughed.
I knew calling him Squirrel would pay off.
Muldus ignored him and stared at the younger man.
Just made lieutenant. Real bad time to go playing hero.
Vindoro shrugged his shoulders.
Never a good time, really. But it ain't like scaling a mountain. Just got to go sideways a bit and climb in a plaguing window. How hard can it be?
The hooded eye didn't reveal much. But Muldus gave a lot away with the other one. For the first time since I met the man, he seemed truly unnerved, maybe even afraid. Then it occurred to me that with Hughspear gone, Vindoro was likely his closest tower mate, and he was in no hurry to see another one die. But it was obvious to all that he couldn't take Vindoro's place, and would have been a lousy choice, even before Ruzjenna had struck him down and robbed him of some of his dexterity.
That settles it, then, Braelar said. Ven, Rudgie, my sister, myself.
Muldu said.
Cap, I thought we covered this. We did. And I'm the only one who can find Bloodsounder. We do not know for certain where it is, but I can tell as I get closer. I go.
He glanced out the window.
It's cloudy now, but not raining. We'll monitor as the day goes. And if it seems like rain is coming in, we'll do it tonight. If not, tomorrow night. But we can't afford to dally and delay. Perhaps Vrilinka is keeping her council at bay, or perhaps they simply deliberate slowly. But they could decide our fates at any moment. We go the moment the rain falls.
Chapter 23 Sometimes fortune favors fools in their folly, and sometimes it acts arbitrarily and favors no one at all, or according to some design mortals are not privy to. While the clouds rolled in and out the remainder of that day, it was clear rain was holding off. But as dusk gave way to night, and the hours dragged on, darker, heavier cloud banks finally moved in and laid claim to the entire sky, inking out the last of the stars. The whole company was anxious, in part dreading the arrival of the deserters before we could see our mad plan to fruition, in part hoping the rain was going to show, but not so early as to make the stones treacherously slick. There couldn't have been more than 2 or 3 hours before daybreak, when the rain came at last. It was hardly a deluge, but certainly enough to make the climb far more dangerous. The tension was a dense thing, as the captain had briefed his men on what they intended to do. While the prospect of escaping here no doubt buoyed their spirits, the equal possibility of losing half their officers in the attempt, or being executed to a man if it was thwarted, weighed heavy enough to sink the spirits entirely. Everyone was short, on edge, or surly. Even Vindoro seemed to want to wait out the day by himself. So I did the same, recording events and then stowing my brass case under my sleeping mat again. While waiting might have been a large part of soldiering, this seemed different somehow, even more difficult to bear than waiting for a battle to begin. At least then I might have been able to do some small part to help, to affect the outcome. The majority of the jackals had to resign themselves to simply waiting and hoping as well. Finally, with the sun long gone and the moon somewhere above us obscured by dense cloud foliage, Braelar gathered his retinue close to the window. The deserters had been keen to leave nothing in these quarters that might be converted into a potential weapon. Except one thing, the clothing we wore. As Morgan had torn strips from several shifts and twisted them tight, Braelar, Sofjian, Vindoro, and Rudgie had the makeshift garrots tucked into their clothing and stood before the dark, watching the rain gently fall. Three of the iron bars that had been in the sill were now in a pile, leaning against the wall beneath, with the dust and rain turning into a paste. As Morgan seemed entirely too pleased with himself, I'd seen him testing their strength earlier in the day, and heard him working at the bars a couple of times in earnest. He might not have been half as strong as a deserter, but he was twice as strong as any normal man. I looked out the window. It was spitting rain, but wet was wet. Muldus moved back from the small puddle on the floor.
Hard to tell, on account of the deserters not needing light to navigate at all, but I ain't seen any movement in any of the other windows for a while. Seems those huge fuckers need to sleep at least. Clear as it's like to get.
It sounded as if he'd hoped to report a battalion of deserters wandering the halls at night to force Braelar to call off the climb. The captain looked at his small crew.
We go slow. No need to end up splattered on the footpaths below due to haste. Make sure you have a good foot and handhold before moving at all. The facade is textured, as Ven pointed out, so there should be no shortage of edges to hold on to. But they are wet. Proceed cautiously. Understood?
They all nodded. But Rudgie added,
I hail from hills and mountains. Done a fair bit of climbing when I was a kid. You've got to go slow, all right, but not so slow your muscles cramp up. Make certain your grip is sure, but don't freeze in the same spot too long. Steady, but keep moving.
Braelar took a deep breath.
Excellent advice, but for any of us not sired by goats like our diminutive sergeant here, if anyone should fall, the body will be discovered by morning, and they will certainly kill every jackal left in these cells. No matter what happens, it is imperative we press on. No matter what. Is that also understood?
Sober nods all around. Braelar might have twitch-smiled, though the darkness made it even more difficult to tell than usual.
Very well. It is time to roll the dice, yes?
Rudgie was the first to start climbing over the windowsill. Vindoro reached over to steady her arms and hold her, but she shook him off.
Nuh-uh. If I can't manage to climb out a window without falling, the dice are loaded the wrong way.
He stepped back, and Rudgie placed her feet on the wall, then reached over to find a handhold.
Nothing to it, she said,
though it was hard to tell how much bravado there was there in the dark.
Keep your eyes on the stones in front of you and not the ones below. You'll do all right.
Everyone watched her stretch, find a new hold, move slightly, and reposition herself. I can't speak for the others, but I felt as if I might throw up. I did look down, and it was a long, long, unforgiving fall. The dark waters moved below, heading towards the drain in the center of the lake. But the trees and footpaths were directly below the windows. At that height, the water might not have been any better anyway. Even with a light rain, it didn't take long for Reggie's shift and curly hair to get damp, then soaked. I was glad it was dark and I could barely make out her silhouette. Even with lives literally hanging in the balance, I was tempted to see how the thin material clung to her, and cursed myself. After Reggie had moved 5 feet away from the edge of the window, Vindero turned to Muldus.
Got no family but my tower mates. All for the best, really. Hate to have someone pining, wondering which foo way I went and got myself killed. But if falling's the way, or getting squashed by a deserter in the hole, make sure Glesser's widow keeps getting her coin. And mine.
Muldus grabbed his shoulder.
You trying to shirk responsibility, you little shit? Plague you. You'll make certain of it yourself. You hear me?
Aye,
Vindero said. Muldus released his arm, and Vindero followed Reggie out onto the wall. He moved more slowly than she, less certain, feeling his way by inches until he disappeared in the darkness after her. Braelar looked at Sofjian.
Let us hope I am better at clinging to wet stones than I was at climbing ladder trees, eh?
She gave him a tight-lipped smile. Yes, let's. Then she watched as he made his way out. I saw him flex his hands after he was a few feet away from the window, and he moved no more quickly than Vindero, but his silhouette slowly disappeared as well. Sofjian rolled her head around on her neck, stretched her arms and legs, and then stepped out on the wet wall. When she too was cloaked by the night and rain, Muldus stepped back from the window and said to no one in particular,
"Dumbest plaguing plan ever."
As Morgan was still leaning out, his big hairy hand a meat shelf above his eyes.
"Should have plaguing said as much when you had the chance, shouldn't you?"
"I did, you monstrous bastard. I plaguing did, but you idiots didn't want to hear it."
The huge lieutenant moved back from the window and shook the water out of his bush of a beard.
"Oh, everyone heard you complaining about something, mushmouth. But nobody heard you suggesting any other real plaguing alternatives, did we?"
As Morgan was half a man heavier, towered over Muldus, and had full use of his massive limbs, but none of those facts seemed to cow the pale boar at all.
"You think it's such a great plaguing idea? Why don't you climb out and see if you can cram those ham hands of yours in those tiny holes?"
As Morgan laughed.
"Your mother said the same plaguing thing."
Muldus's fist shot out and slammed into the larger man's nose. And even though he was maimed and hindered, he stepped in and landed an elbow on either side of Asmorgon's ribs. Anyone else would have collapsed on the spot, but Asmorgon simply grunted and brought his giant fist down on the crown of Muldus's head. The shorter lieutenant dropped to a knee, but as Morgan raised his tree trunk arm to strike him again, Muldus sprang up with his shoulder right into his Morgan's crotch. That did faze the ogre. Muldus was smaller than him, but still thick with muscle and pride, and no man was immune to such a shot. As Morgan grunted again and staggered back, doubled over, and Muldus's body betrayed him as he lost his balance and almost fell over himself. I yelled, "Stop!" and then remembered it was the middle of the night and lowered my voice, trying it again as a harsh whisper.
"Both of you! The captain needs us ready!"
Muldus regained his footing first and came forward, his fists up. The ogre was still hunched over, but when the smaller man was nearly on him, as Morgan's arm swept up and he caught Muldus with the back of his hand, sending him sprawling towards the wet floor by the window. I tried to grab Asmorgon's arm, but it was like trying to restrain a rooter. He shrugged me off and nearly sent me spilling to the stones, but I regained my balance, ran in front of him, and positioned myself between the two men as Muldus tried to get back to his feet and slipped, falling on his side.
"This is madness," I said. "When the captain and the rest make it back here."
I looked at Muldus.
"And they will make it back here. No matter how stupid you think the plan is, they will need every able-bodied man to fight free of this place. Do you think for a moment Captain Kilcoyne will be merciful to idiots who started fighting the second he was out of sight and bloodied or murdered each other? No. The answer is no.
I thought Ismorgon would bat me out of the way like a gnat, or worse, turn those huge fists on me before attacking Muldoose again. But he stopped, wiping some blood off his nose and mustache.
Just a friendly scrap. Men blowing off steam is all. Ought to try it sometime. Against a sack of leaves or something.
He walked away, chuckling at his own joke, licking blood off his hairy fingers. I turned to Muldoose and offered my hand as he made his way to his feet again, but he shook his head.
Don't need your plaguing help, Scribbler. Had it under control.
Uh-huh, I replied. Of course, just like Braelar did against that big spearman when we rescued Henlester. How silly of me. Some anger flashed in his one good eye, and I was sure he was going to strike me. But then he stopped, and reached up to rub the knot forming on his skull.
Yep. Just like that.
I said, that wasn't just a friendly scrap, was it? Muldoose shrugged his shoulders.
Do you mean, would one of us beat the other to death? Nah, likely not. But there weren't nothing friendly about it, neither.
I nodded, and then said, you don't like each other much, do you? Muldoose spit some blood on the floor.
We're brothers, jackals. I'd die defending him, and him me, when it came down to it. But no, we don't like each other much. That's for certain.
I shuddered, imagining how quickly Ismorgon could have turned me into a bloody puddle if he wanted to. That shot to the groin should have felled him. I was amazed he kept going.
Muldoose replied, the ogre's the biggest bastard I ever seen, leastwise before this side of the Vale. Takes a lot to take him out, and I didn't hit him square as I would have liked. Got a lot of thigh.
I guess you better hit him right in the jewels next time. Muldoose favored me with a bloody smile.
Guessing so.
Chapter 24. I watched the candle near me burning, wick flickering and hissing, wax very slowly melting. It was a torturous way to pass the time, but I knew sleep would prove impossible. It amazed me that so many of the Sildoon were able to close their eyes with such apparent ease, but that seemed to be a skill inherent or nurtured through years of potentially having death around every corner. Eventually, you must simply get inured to such things. Vinduro and Braelar had both cautioned me to try to get some rest whenever the opportunity was there. But all I could think every time I shut my eyes and tried was the likelihood that someone had plummeted to their deaths climbing the wet stones outside, their scream lost in the sounds of running water and rain, or been impaled on one of the deserters' massive flat-hafted clubs, or otherwise dispatched in gruesome fashion. Still, I must have possessed some innate talent for sleeping while stressed, as I managed to drift off when a hand roughly shook me awake. The candle was still lit and hadn't burned much lower, so it couldn't have been that long.
What? Are they... Did they...
Muldoo said.
They're back. And they brought a friend. We're moving.
I rubbed my eyes, still tired but suddenly very alert, and joined all the other Sildoon who were gathered in the main chamber by the open door. I was relieved to see all of them had returned. Their hair and clothes were still damp, but they were very much alive. Braelar and Vinduro were each holding a short, blunt candlestick they had procured, with long spikes where the candles would be mounted. Sofjian was carrying a lit lamp, and Rudgie was propping an unconscious Nastenzia against the wall opposite the door. All of us inside the room stopped just short of the trigger that set off the memory trap and waited. I had 100 questions and was glad I couldn't approach, or I might have simply spewed them all at once. Braelar was looking down the hallway when Muldoose said,
a lantern, Cap. Ain't that a bit obvious?
Braelar replied,
better that than stumbling about in the dark.
Then he turned to Sofjian. Time is of the essence, yes? Wake our dreaming focus. Now, if you please.
She looked at Nastenza as she set the lamp down. I will try. I wanted to be sure she didn't raise an alarm, so I took her out somewhat more forcefully than I intended.
Sofjin tilted the woman's chin up with one hand and pressed her other hand on the side of the focus's head. She closed her eyes, lips moving the way a mumbler's might, barely perceptible. And a moment later, Nastenza's eyes flew open, and she jerked as if dunked in cold water.
Rudgy held her tight, as Sofjin said. I'm tired, anxious, and peckish, so there is a very good chance I won't take you out so gently a second time. I suggest you behave yourself.
Nastenza looked at the Memrodon and three Saldoon, then through the door at the rest of us watching.
Well, she said, then wiped some spittle off her lip. This is a surprise. I'm not certain what you possibly hope to gain by abducting, Braelar said.
You seem a moderately clever woman. I'm sure you can piece things together. You are going to help us escape.
Nastenza laughed, and then lifted her hand to cover her mouth, as if it might continue if she didn't stifle it.
Oh, no. No, I'm sure you are mistaken. You could not.
Braelar loomed over her.
You are going to either remove that trap, or you are going to guide us through the door. I don't particularly care which. But you will do one of those things, or I will beat you to death in this hallway. Now, tell me again. Am I very much mistaken?
Nastenza blinked several times, and slowly lowered her hands.
I would like to live, truly, but I do not possess the power to undo what my masters have done.
She looked at Sofjin. Your own flesh and blood here possesses far more potent abilities than my meager skills. I have seen it. I assure you.
Sofjin grabbed the woman's face with both hands and pressed hard. And I assure you that getting beaten to death will be a far kinder fate than what I can do to you, and will if you do not cooperate. Now, you have narrow scope of ability, it's true. But what the deserters have not neutered is quite impressive indeed. You forget, I too have seen what you do. You amplify power. That is something no one in my order has managed, and you can do it with the deserter's memory craft, which is several times more potent than what I can do. So you will tell me how to manage this, and you will assist, or you will suffer immeasurably. And then I will let my brother finish you off with his barbaric fists. Do you understand, Lady Focus?
Nastenza looked at Sofjin, saw the truth in the threat, and nodded. Or as much as she could, while her head was mostly immobilized.
Sofjin let go of her and said, Good. Now tell me how to do this thing.
Nastenza pushed herself off the wall and stood.
The spell is woven into the stones itself. We cannot shut it down entirely. Only the matriarch or one of her sisterhood could manage such a thing. But we might be able to bypass it long enough for the Saldoon to walk out. But I do not know for sure. And even if we manage this, you are still trapped.
Let us worry about what comes next, Braelar said. You will be kept alive only so long as you prove useful. I suggest you begin proving yourself now. And I don't suppose I need to tell you what will happen if you betray us, delay us, or lie to us, do I?
Nastenza gave a rueful smile. Oh, no, I am moderately clever. I believe I know. Then she took Sofjin by the hand and stepped forward, stopping just outside the door.
We cannot stop the trap, but I believe we can stop it from reacting to you.
Like the veil around Ruxtiniac? Sofjin asked.
Yes, precisely. So, we will enter, and I will try to help you, to give your soldiers a temporary mark. It won't hold long, but...
Long enough, Sofjin finished. Go on. What do I need to do?
The older woman said. Concentrate on me, bonding with me. Do you think you can do that?
Sufchin gave her that full pine smile she and Braylar shared. Oh, I do have some experience at that. The pair walked through the large doorway holding hands. I half expected the light and sounds to explode anyway, but the two women made it through without the slightest ripple or reaction. When they were inside the range of the trap, Sofjin asked, And now? Now, Nistenzia replied, it becomes more elusive. I cannot create the mark the door recognizes, but if you can figure it out, the mark in me, I can assist you in tagging each man in this room with it. Sofjin looked puzzled, Braylar irritated, and as Morgan and Muldus seemed like they were ready to put aside their differences to pummel the woman to death. And then something hit me. It will be something raised, or textured, something the deserters could sense after they had marked a human with it, like the brand on Nestensia's face, but probably buried inside them. Sofjin favored me with one of her rare, heartfelt smiles. Yes, Arki, I suspect you are right. She looked at Nestensia again, closed her eyes, and for a moment I thought the focus might try to run back out the door. But she closed her eyes as well, thin arms slack at her sides, and accepted the examination. A few moments later, Sofjin opened her eyes and took the older woman by the hand again. Open yourself up. I will show you the mark. But you will need to help me apply it to the Sildoon. Nestensia gave a curt nod. As you say, I will try. The two women stood silently, hand in hand, facing the Sildoon. Several moments dragged by, and I heard Benk whisper,
What are those witches playing at? What's taking so plaguing?
Muldus growled. Shut your mouth, soldier.
Benk glared at Muldus, but wisely said nothing more. Sofjin opened her eyes, as did Nestensia, and the Memrodon said, Benk, since you seem so eager to walk out of here, you will be our test subject. Walk through the door. Benk looked like he very much wished he had kept his mouth shut, and he turned to his Morgan for guidance. The ogre said,
Get to it, you little bastard.
Then he slapped Benk on the back with an open hand and sent him flying forward. Benk flailed, arms waving, as he tried to grab Purchase, but there was only air, and he nearly landed on his face. When he finally stopped himself, he was only a foot from the door, well within range of the trap, which had not been activated. Braylar asked,
Are the rest marked?
Nestensia nodded, and Braylar said,
Two at a time, then. Out you come.
The Sildoon lined up and began walking through the portal. Each time they seemed to hold their breath or flinch, and each time they exited unmolested. I ran back to my sleeping roll, snatched my writing case, and made it back just in time to walk out with a soldier ahead of Muldus and Asmorgon, the last Sildoon. When they were all clear of the room, Sofjin and Nestensia walked out as well. The focus said, I would continue proving my worth. What would you have of me? Braylar said,
Are there patrols in the middle of the night?
No, she replied. What need?
And guards at the stairwells?
Again, no.
And on the floor below, am I to believe that the storage room full of our arms and armor is unguarded as well?
Nestensia's brow wrinkled. I have never checked. I could not say. Braylar said,
And if you had to hazard a guess?
She gave him a cold, level look. The room itself? No, not likely. But it is near the barracks. They occupy three floors in the palace, the one below ours, and two below that. So if you are asking if you will run into my masters, I would say yes, even in the middle of the night. You just might. Judging by the gleam in her eye, she was looking forward to that prospect.
Braylar said, Bloodsounder, my flail, it is close, I can feel it. Is it housed with everything else they took from us?
She gave him a long look, and then the tiniest of smiles. You are Bloodsounder. You would know better than I. He appraised her as well, and then decided her sarcasm wasn't worthy of a rejoinder, and instead addressed his troops.
"We reclaim what is ours, and we kill anyone who tries to stop us. Then we are free."
It sounded so deceptively simple and singular. We left our quarters, Braelar, his officers, Sofjin, and Estensia at the front, with the rest of the Sildoon following. I was in the group of soldiers just behind Braelar's retinue. Nastensia was bound with strips of cloth, but left ungagged, presumably to mine her for information as we proceeded. I overheard snippets of conversation about our horses and the shifts of deserters. Braelar didn't seem especially worried about her giving us away. If someone encountered a group of Sildoon prisoners wandering the halls, it wouldn't much matter if Nastensia shouted or not. We made it to the stairwell without incident and started spiraling down, with the single lantern taken from Nastensia's quarters lighting our way and throwing shaky shadows on the walls. While our numbers had been thinned considerably since leaving Sunrak, it was still a large party to sneak through a sleeping citadel, and the sound of so many feet moving at once seemed like drums to my ears. I expected we would alert the deserters of our passing any moment. While I hadn't grown accustomed to weapons and could only use them with something just below competency, I couldn't help wishing I had something in my hands to defend myself with. It was ridiculous, really. If we were discovered, we were doomed, as a handful of deserters could take out what remained of our company, even if we were fully armed and armored. But I had never felt more defenseless in my life, walking down those gigantic halls and stairs. The doorway to the level below was open, as seemed to be deserter custom. Braelar held up a hand, and we all stopped walking down, though several soldiers bumped into each other where the lantern failed to keep the darkness at bay. I strained to hear as the captain whispered something to Muldus, and turned and grabbed Rudgie by her small shoulder. The sergeant moved around him on the oversized stairs and made her way to the doorway. She and Sofjin crept out onto the floor and moved off in opposite directions. Braelar was leaning close to Nastensia, speaking in her ear and listening to her whispered response. He nodded and waited until the two women returned and reported. I assumed the way was clear as we started to file out, heading to the left. The soldier ahead of me shoved me off with his elbow as I nearly fell over him in the dark.
"Watch it, you skinny bastard! Keep your bony bones to yourself!"
With every step, I imagined deserters suddenly roaring and charging out of their barracks quarters to crush us into red sludge, and I felt my heart hammering like a cornered animal's. The company walked by several open doors as quietly as we could, and I was sure the light from the lantern, however shuttered, might wake the deserters, until remembering that they couldn't see light or dark. But their legless human basket riders, or slaves, were another matter, and I had no illusion about them not waking their masters if they did. We followed the gently curving corridor around the round keep, and then Nastensia pointed further ahead. Braelar called a halt, and Rudgie again did the advance scouting, creeping forward at a crouch as she disappeared into the dark. And we waited. I looked behind us, though there was nothing to see save the illuminated contours of hardened faces. Rudgie came back a minute later, and I thought I saw her hold up two fingers. Braelar nodded, and he huddled with his officers. They exchanged some signals with their hands. Sofjin interjected herself, grabbing her brother's arm as she shook her head. She pointed at herself. They clearly didn't agree, but without being able to throw verbal barbs at each other, they managed to resolve it fairly quickly. Another hand signal exchange occurred between captain and men, and they nodded silently. Sofjin straightened up and pressed herself close to the wall as she began sidling along it towards whatever lay ahead. The keep was so large, and the curve of the hall so gradual, it would be impossible to truly sneak up on anything. If there were deserter guards ahead, I didn't see what hope we had of continuing. But then again, I wasn't the one issuing hand commands. Vinduro and Braelar followed, wielding the carved candlesticks as short weapons, then the other officers and a few other soldiers. They all stopped 20 or 30 paces from Sofjian, who was still pressed up against the wall ahead. Then she stepped away from the wall, though it was difficult to see anything more than the faintest silhouette in the dark. Nothing happened, and she took a few steps ahead and raised both her hands. I knew her fingers must have been splayed, though they were impossible to see. She continued walking, and then I heard something scuffling from somewhere further down the corridor. But it was immediately lost in the footfalls of 8 Sildoon rushing forward. Maldus grabbed Anastasia's arm and held up a hand. I couldn't make out what happened in the gloom ahead, but I heard fighting and some guttural grunts. Then a pronounced thud that could have only been a deserter hitting the floor, followed closely by another. Maldus lowered his hand and the rest of the company approached. I saw the deserters' arms and legs on the ground while Vinduro and Braelar continued bludgeoning them with their candlesticks. One deserter's four-fingered hand jerked, and the other one shifted his limbs a little. But it was clear they weren't putting up a fight. And with their thick skin, it took multiple blows before the captain and lieutenant delivered enough to make sure they didn't get up again. Braelar had chosen to crack open a skull, and Vinduro was using both arms to drive the spike of the candlestick into the other deserter's neck. I forced myself not to gag, as I saw a large pool of blood that looked as black as ink in the pale, flickering light, and I nearly stepped in it before seeing it. Blood was dripping off both slender spikes of the candlesticks the captain and lieutenant were holding, and splattered on their forearms and chests. Nastenzia looked at Sofjian, then at the deserters, and back to the Memrodon. Her voice was measured, but not disguising some awe along the edges.
You stunned them?
Sofjian was massaging her temples with two fingers. Something like that, though differently than I had tried before when they captured us. She glanced at me, and then looked at her brother. The wielders can shape human emotions, manipulate them, but they also detest them, and can only abide them in small doses. And the deserter warriors are no wielders. I assaulted them with human memories. Lots of human memories. We all walked around the bodies and into the storage room, except for several Sildoon who remained behind to pull the huge bodies inside after us and stay by the door to monitor the hall. I expected to see racks of deserter weapons and armor, but those must have been in the rooms the deserters bunked down in, or at least a different storage room than this one. Here, there were several rows of orderly wooden shelves with crates, barrels, and other miscellaneous containers organized neatly. Braelar held up a flat hand and stared straight ahead. To himself, he whispered,
"They didn't separate it after all."
Then he moved away from the light and into the gloom. I strained to see what he was doing as his silhouette disappeared. We all waited, no one patiently, until he finally returned. And then I saw the lantern glint off the steel in his hands and heard the dull rattle of chains. I couldn't make out his face, but then I heard Braelar rasp,
"Our gear is in the back. Come on."
He led us further into the room, and along the back wall were several tables, all lined with various pieces of armor, helms, swords, axes, sirocas, a falchion, a rancer, and whatever that massive half-blade, half-haft polearm as Morgan favored was called. It took several minutes for everyone to find their gear, with a great deal of clinking, clattering, and muttered cursing that could have woken the dead. It took even longer for the Sildoon and the Memrodon to strip out the shifts the deserters had given us, put on old clothing, and then arm themselves. After dressing as quickly as I could, I wiggled into my gambeson and nearly choked on the stench, having forgotten what a rank, sweat-stained, mildewy piece of armor it was. Still, it was much better than wearing no protection at all. I didn't see the dented nasal helm I'd worn before, but there was an unclaimed kettle helm with a brim on the table.
I tried not to think about the former owner as I plopped it on my head. It wasn't a bad fit, and the lining in the helm wasn't as foul as what I had dealt with wearing the last helm. I gathered a belt and quiver of bolts, buckled it around my waist. With our numbers reduced, ammunition was the only thing that wasn't a problem just now. I was about to grab a crossbow when I saw Loy's curved sword and scabbard in the shadows. Ridiculous as it was, it nearly brought tears to my eyes as I buckled that around my waist. Vinduro grabbed me by the shoulder as I selected a crossbow from the three remaining. He had a lamellar cuirass over his mail habergeon that seemed to be reserved for the lieutenants or higher officers. It would still take some getting used to his change in rank, and I didn't like to think on it, as that meant dwelling on why the promotion was necessary in the first place. He gave me a big, toothy grin.
"Not bad, Bookmaster. Sling that writing case, and you might actually be protected for a bit."
I followed his advice, and while I felt awkward with everything strapped, slung, and shifting as I moved, it was the best kind of clumsiness in the world. Looking around, I could almost feel the Saldoon's spirits rising as well. They were still every bit as grim and determined. But if they died now, at least it would be with steel in their hands and going down fighting. That thought almost spoiled things, and I tried to remind myself that we were going to win our freedom, not be slaughtered in the attempt. Braelar said, "We make for the stairs. There is only one direction after that. Down, down, down. We kill anyone we encounter." A soldier asked,
"Human slaves?"
"Anyone," Braelar replied, as he slipped the aventail of his helm over his shoulder, his face all but hidden behind the mail curtain. "We cannot afford an alarm being sounded, or anyone reporting our presence, and the slaves are most certainly more terrified of their masters than us, so we cannot depend on any promises they might make to keep silent. If fortune favors us, we won't have to wet our blades at all. More likely, she will give us a poison kiss. Either way, we descend to the main floor, dripping red or otherwise." He looked at Nastenzia. "From there, we sprint to the rooter pens and pray they haven't slaughtered our horses, or this escape will prove short-lived." Muldus added,
"And if any of you plaguers are prone to prattling to the gods begging favors, you might want to ask them to keep the drizzle coming a while longer yet too."
With that, the depleted but fully armed Saldoon party started for the doorway. Rudgie had replaced one of the other Saldoon by the door so they could get their gear on, but she came running over now.
"Three of the big bastards coming this way, Cap."
Braelar said,
"Are they hunting us?"
Rudgie shook her head.
"Doesn't look like it, but once they see that big old puddle of red out there..."
Braelar ordered everyone away from the door and to take position out of sight.
He whispered, "On my word, we storm out. Three at a time."
We crouched and waited, listening for the unmistakable heavy footsteps approaching. I heard the deserters while they were still somewhere down the hall, but the pace and rhythm changed, then stopped altogether. There was some muffled discussion in their gruff language, and then more footsteps, this time receding. Braelar lowered his fist, and the first of the men poured out of the storage room, all with crossbows loaded and ready to loose. I heard the twang of the crossbow strings and zip of the bolts, followed by a cry, and then more bolts loosing with the next wave of Saldoon stepping into the hallway, and more with the third and fourth. The deserters cried out and grunted, while the giant's hat thick skin, they hadn't been wearing any additional armor, and at that range, most of the bolts had no trouble penetrating them. Still, it would take more than that to bring them down. I came out and saw the Saldoon spanning the crossbows. 15 paces down the hall, one deserter was bleeding everywhere as he leaned against the wall, having taken the bulk of the bolts. Another giant was charging towards us, and the third had gotten away. The Saldoon loosed several more bolts at both. The deserter against the wall slid down, dropping to his knee, still taller than most men,
but the closest one was only enraged as a bolt sank into the thick, inscribed flesh. Several Sildoon worked the levers on the devil's claws, while others switched to hand-to-hand weapons, dropping the crossbows or flinging them over their shoulders as they brought shields and melee weapons to bear. This deserter looked even bigger than most, emerging out of the dark and into the pool of lamplight like a pale nightmare. He swung the giant spiked club, catching one of the Sildoon still spanning his crossbow in the chest, lifting him off his feet and swinging the body into another soldier, knocking them both to the floor as he pulled the club free, blood spraying. A Sildoon stepped into the space, thrust his sword up to try to puncture the giant's throat. But the deserter sidled sideways, and the sword skidded off the huge, pale neck, barely drawing blood. The deserter backhanded the soldier and sent him flying, then brought his hand up to the haft, lifted the club high, about to bring the spikes down into two Sildoon who had their shields up. Three more bolts struck the giant in the throat, and he gurgled and staggered back, lowering the club slowly as he reached up and snapped the hafts of the bolts. Another bolt slammed into the giant's face, between where the eyes should have been, and he fell into the wall and then down to the floor. Four Sildoon marched up, shooting the giant again to be sure he was finished, and a handful of others did the same with the other deserter who was sitting against the wall, head lowered on his massive chest. When the bolts struck that body, the deserter didn't even flinch. The captain already had us moving out then. Vinduro ordered two Sildoon to watch the hallway behind us as we started for the stairs. We stepped around the deserter bodies, and I saw drops of blood on the floor far ahead of us. But I wasn't close enough to be sure. I was wondering how badly the third deserter had been wounded when I felt something brush against my ankle. I jerked away from the huge boot and nearly pulled the long trigger of the crossbow. Vinduro said,
"Easy, Aki. He was just twitching a bit, nothing more."
Then added with a good-natured laugh,
"Seen mice jump away from cats slower than that."
I stared at him, amazed he could joke in this situation. But then again, he could joke in almost any situation. We filled out the rear, with the other two Sildoon hanging back behind us about 20 paces, and started forward at a quick walk to keep the jangling and clattering to a minimum. But there was just no good way to sneak in armor. I didn't think we were going to catch the bloody deserter, not unless he dropped dead from the wounds. While I saw some more blood drops here and there on the floorboards, most smeared by the shoes in front of me, it was difficult to tell how serious the injuries were. I was no physician, but I knew a deserter had a lot more blood pumping through its veins, which meant it could stand to lose quite a bit more before bleeding out, unless a vital organ was punctured. We were still 60 or 70 yards from the stairwell when we halted briefly. I wasn't tall enough to make out anything that happened at the front of the line, but that didn't stop me from getting on the balls of my feet to try. Vinduro slapped me on the back. Well, on the writing case.
"Never met a curiouser soul in my life."
I regained my balance and was turning to respond when the line was moving forward again.
"See?"
he said, jogging alongside me.
"That's the thing about soldiering. Real simple, like. When you need to know something, you're told something. And when you don't, you ain't."
I was considering how to best reply to that when I saw the third deserter body face down on the floorboards, dark circles around the multitude of bolts sticking out, mostly from its back and legs, except for what I assumed was the final bolt at the base of its skull between the twin manes that ran down its back. I didn't have time to look at it beyond that as we raced past, closing in on the stairwell. And that's when I saw two more deserters step out of a doorway ahead on our left. While neither was armed, one had the spiked, flat-hafted great club in his hands, and they were no doubt checking on the commotion in the hall. I couldn't make out much. The line stopped so abruptly, I nearly ran into the man ahead of me. I heard crossbows loosed at the front and saw that the first several lines were staggered, with those in the very front kneeling, and those immediately behind, fanning out to shoot over them. A few bolts hit both giants and flew off at an angle, grazing them barely, or not at all at that distance. But several struck true. One deserter stepped back, fletching from a half dozen bolts sticking out of his chest and stomach. The other roared as a bolt struck him in the shoulder, and he disappeared back inside the door. The next line loosed, and four or five more bolts hit the deserter still in the hall. The giant spun, grabbing for the wall, trying to stay upright as the Sildoon slowly advanced, and the next line loosed as well. The deserter did go down then, though he was on his hands and knees, one hand still on the wall. Another volley finished him. And then we kept moving, those in the front tossing the crossbow straps over their shoulders and switching to melee weapons, mostly shields and one-handed weapons, except for Asmorgon, and of course Sofjian with her Rancer. The other Sildoon kept their loaded crossbows at the ready, but I heard Venduro say to me,
"The second you shoot that bolter, you draw that blade. Might have need of it."
I kept my fingers away from the long trigger, hoping I wouldn't need to shoot the crossbow, knowing I would, and not wanting to accidentally discharge it into a Sildoon's back in front of me. I looked back and saw Nastenzia near the rear, but not the last line where she could potentially run. Lamplight does queer things to expressions, but I was pretty sure she looked either horrified or terrified, or both. We closed in on the door, and four more deserters started to come out, and this time they were wearing hardened leather and brass armor, or at least pieces of it, and they were all armed. The Sildoon had two very small advantages. The deserters apparently had no shields, and none had the javelin throwers on their backs. Braelar called a halt, and the Sildoon in the front rows dropped down while those behind them loosed. Most of the bolts struck the targets. They were huge and hard to miss, but a few hit the stone walls behind the deserters, and some ricocheted off the brass plates. The four giants started running down the hall, the first two with several bolts in them already. The second row of Sildoon switched to melee weapons as the row behind took aim and loosed. One of the deserters that was struck in the throat stumbled, and a deserter behind him tripped over his fallen comrade. But the other two came on, roaring and cursing us in their tongue. The next two rows of Sildoon did the same, and the other deserter in the front slowed down, wobbled, and then fell against a wall, scrambling for support before sliding down to his hands and knees. The other deserter came on, with only one bolt in his barrel of a bicep, and the one who stumbled had regained his footing and wasn't far behind. The Sildoon in front had their shields locked edge to edge, forming a small wall in the hallway, while those behind them continued reloading and shooting over them. The first deserter hit the shield wall, throwing his hip into the soldiers, knocking several Sildoon back as if they'd been hit by a battering ram, limbs and shields flying, and then the giant started swinging his great club in all directions. The three spikes blasted through one shield like translucent spearheads, driving that Sildoon to his knees until the deserter kicked him in the chest and sent him flying back. Swords and axes hit the deserter, most deflected by the armor, with one axe seeming to cut deep above the deserter's elbow. But the giant swatted that soldier away with a haft of his club, sending him spilling into the crossbow man behind, several bolts shooting up at the ceiling. The deserter caught a Sildoon in the side, wrenched his spiked club back out of the torso, tossed the body aside, and started swinging again. The deserter coming up hit a Sildoon as well, laying about with his great club. The three spikes drove through the scale cuirass and into the soldier's back as he tried to regain his balance, crushing him to the ground. The deserter stepped on the body and ripped his weapon free before taking two long strides to rejoin his companion, still sowing chaos in what remained of the shield wall. The Sildoon slashed and stabbed, drawing blood, but delivering no incapacitating wounds. A deserter blocked a blow from Asmorgon that would have destroyed any man, turned the long blade with the spikes, and stepped in, ignoring a sword slash and slamming the haft of the great club into the shields,
sending several more Sildoon sprawling backwards. The other deserter paused and bellowed as a bolt slammed into his neck. While I was worried about hitting the Sildoon in front of me, the giant towered over all of them. I took aim and loosed, and my bolt hit the giant's cheekbone and flew off behind him. But he stopped moving long enough for several other Sildoon around me to do the same, two more bolts sprouting from the flesh just inside the collarbone, above the hardened leather, and another from the giant's head. That deserter fell back out of sight. Sofjian's Rancer shot out from the second line, the long middle tine driving deep into the deserter's shoulder. She pulled it back as the giant grabbed for the tasseled haft. But that only seemed to enrage the deserter more as he stepped in, the spiked great club coming down in an arc. The Sildoon directly in front of him wasn't able to move back in time, and the spines drove through the wood and impaled his arm. He screamed, and the deserter shook the great club, yanking the soldier forward as he slammed a fist into the shield and pulled the weapon free. But instead of retreating back to the line, the soldier dove forward, driving his shield into the giant's crotch. The mighty deserter bent over as three more bolts struck him, one ricocheting off a horn or the thick skull underneath, but the other two hitting him on either side of the neck. The deserter backhanded the Sildoon, sending him flying into a wall, but was still slow to stand back up. Then another bolt hit him in the middle of the throat, and he fell backwards. The fourth deserter, who I thought out of the fight, came running out of the shadows at the Sildoon. Soldiers stepped up to protect their brother with the three holes in his arm, but the deserter was faster to react and charged in, the great club crashing down. Even badly injured, the Sildoon still managed to get his shield up and deflect the worst of the blow. But even as the spikes skipped off the surface, he screamed in agony again, his arm likely broken as well as bleeding, and the shield didn't come back up in time to protect him from the next blow. Three spikes jutted out the back of his hauberk. Two more bolts hit the deserter, but the Sildoon had had enough of fighting defensively. Several broke the wall and ran forward, led by Braelar and Muldus, hobbled as he was. The deserter spun his great club with the body still impaled on it. The dead soldier flew into the jackals, knocking one to the ground, but the others came on, surrounding the bloodied giant. He swung everywhere, the huge haft swooshing through the air as he tried to keep the Sildoon at bay. But like a bear flanked by wild dogs, he could only spin and cover himself so long. Vinduro darted in from the rear, slashed the deserter across the back of the legs, and managed to step away from the great club as the giant pivoted and tried to catch him with a two-handed blow. Braelar and Muldus closed in then, the lieutenant chopping into the deserter's legs again with his falchion, hamstringing one. The deserter staggered and was slow to spin and attack. Braelar moved with him, and the twin flail heads lashed out, catching the deserter on the underside of his broad chin. The giant's head snapped back, and he fell into the wall, and then the other Sildoon were on him, weapons a blur as they attacked without remorse. When they stepped back, the deserter was in a bloody heap on the floor. I heard someone vomiting and turned to see Nastenzia doubled over, weak in the knees from the looks of it. And then she sputtered and heaved again. The Sildoon stepped away from her, but I felt sympathy, even if she was technically the enemy. I'd seen enough bloodshed with the Sildoon that my stomach no longer rebelled every time. But I remembered how awful and shocking it was to witness, though I imagined she had seen her masters do far worse, and my sympathy dried up. As Morgan turned to Sofjian,
"What's with the plaguing skinny poker, witch? We lost two good men on account of you. You should have—"
"You really are a massive fool. We will lose the entire company if I exhaust myself before we are free of this blasted city, you idiot. We still have the Veil Dome around Roxtiniac to contend with. Or had you forgotten that small detail?" I thought as Morgan was going to attack her, when the two Sildoon who had been holding up the rear rushed forward, one of them stopping near me, the other running past and shouting,
"Cap, Dezette is coming fast. pouring out of the doors behind.
Braylar got us moving again, with several Sildoon at the front pausing long enough to stab the prone deserter bodies a few more times, conserving bolts, and several more jackals looking at their fallen comrades as we ran past.